Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
What life is like in Ireland for intersex people? That's the question that our next guest is seeking to answer in a fascinating new research project. Dr. Tania Ní Uirchéile from DCU's School of Law and Government. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Cormac. How are you?
Not too bad at all, thank you. I'm extremely interested, I must say, in your research project and what you propose to do with it because, well, let's start at the beginning. Intersex is a term that many of our listeners may think they understand. An awful lot of them won't be familiar with it. But you might tell us what it means.
Sure. Intersex is one of many terms used to describe a person born with variations of their sex characteristics. In other words, they're born with a body that's configured differently to what we might expect from male and female bodies.
And that's, when you describe it further, then it's babies or people born with atypical genitalia, isn't that right?
That's one part of it, yeah, but it can also be people who have chromosomes that don't match what we expect. So a woman with XY chromosomes, which we'd normally find in a man, or the other way around, or you could have an X0, or there's a whole different loads of chromosome anomalies, or indeed a person born with gonads, so that's internal testes or ovaries that don't match what we might expect from other aspects of their body.
And how common is all of that?
It's a bit hard to tell. The UN says that 1.7% of the population would have some kind of an intersex variation. And there are at least 40 different medical labels and many other people whose bodies are intersex, but they don't have a label. So to put that in the Irish context, and I'm not great at your numbers now, but I had a look at the census from 2016.
Okay.
1.7%, around 77,000 people, or 5,000 more than the number of people who were in Cavan on the night of the census in 2016.
Okay, well, that gives us an indication then. You're not too bad with the figures, I must say. But like an awful lot of things, Dr. Ní Uirchéile, in this country, historically we had terms and we had kind of ways of describing things that were that are now considered highly offensive. And hermaphrodite is a word that was used to describe people with both sets of genitals, for example. Now, people with those characteristics are mentioned throughout history, aren't they? And it has caused pain down through the ages, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go right back to ancient Greek times, Plato, Aristotle, those lads, they were writing about intersex people. Mm-hmm. I'm a lawyer, so I'm interested in legal texts. And there's this guy in the 1600s called Lord Coke, who wrote a book all about the laws that were in England at the time. And he talked about how intersex people could inherit land the same as men and women could.
It was fascinating, isn't it? And then from the mid-20th century onwards, can you tell me what happened to a baby who was born with atypical sex characteristics? How was it dealt with then?
Well, there was a medical practice back then that intervened. If someone was born with atypical sex characteristics or atypical genitalia, there would be an intervention, either a medical intervention or a surgical intervention, to reshape and to re-sculpt the body along more apparently male or female lines. But it was a very much a cosmetic procedure, because having an intersex body is not necessarily threatening to your life or health in most cases.
Mm-hmm. And who'd decide then?
Well, back in the mid-20th century, it was the doctors, the medical team, it was a system known as an optimum gender of rearing. So the medical team would sit down and work out what would be the best thing to do for this particular child, and then tell the family that's what they were going to do.
Wow. And how would they decide? What was the criteria?
Oh, sure. All sorts of things. In general, trying to make sure that boys could go to the toilet standing up, and that if it was at all possible to preserve fertility for girls, or to enable girls to have to be intimate with their husbands in the future, that's what you were trying to preserve.
And presumably, well, maybe I'm wrong in presuming this, they didn't get it right in all cases, and people would have grown up having been decided by clinicians at the time of their birth to progress in a male body, but these people would have grown up as women or vice versa, feeling as women. What damage would that have caused, I wonder?
Well, that's it. That certainly was a feature, but that's actually only one small aspect of it. More worryingly, from those older cases, it's people growing up with bodies where interventions had happened, and that would have a knock-on impact on other aspects of a person's health. So teams were taking healthy bodies, different but healthy bodies, and through their interventions, basically making them unwell. And so all the arguments that we might hear from people about female genital mutilation, pain, chronic pain, scarring, lack of sexual sensation and all that. We hear all of that in the context of intersex as well, which is why the UN has on occasion called these kinds of interventions, when they're done without the consent of the person, intersex genital mutilation.
Which is why I find your research now and the research you propose to do absolutely fascinating, the way it has impacted people in this country. And this is right up to recent times. Now, for your research project, you're looking to speak to intersex people in Ireland. How do they contact you?
We're looking to speak to intersex people, to their families. We've also spoken with some healthcare professionals who treat intersex people, and it's worth noting they tell us that modern medical practice isn't like that anymore. But people can contact us on intersex@dcu.ie.
Okay, and it's very different nowadays. We don't have time to get into it, but I presume you want to speak to people in Ireland or Irish people who have moved abroad and who have been impacted by this.
That's it. Anyone who has experience of being what it's like to be intersex in Ireland, in its simplest way, we want to know what the story is with intersex in Ireland. And we're enormously grateful to the Irish Research Council for funding this project and enabling us to do the work.
Okay, and before I let you go, can people do this anonymously? Can they contact you and then
absolutely
give...
Yeah, they can email us, or they can go onto our website dcu.ie/intersex, and we have an anonymous online survey as well. It's a very long survey, but it's instead of an interview, if someone wants to fill out that instead of talking to us, because there are many people who would prefer not to be identified, and obviously we will do everything with our work to make sure that nobody is identified and we preserve people's anonymity.
Dr. Tania Ní Wuerchula of the School of Law and Government in DCU, thank you very much indeed for joining us.